Hi, everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable episode 263, where we are talking about Angel season 5, episode 13, Why We Fight, and episode 14, Smile Time. My name is Caitlin, and it is a super fan heavy episode this week. We've got Natalie and Mai are here, and Brittany, our lone newbie, demanded to be on this week. That's who we have with us. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Hello. Yeah, sorry to force the newbies their you know, well earned reactions to this episode. However, this is probably also the only time Mai and I will be on a Buffy episode together. Or, well, not Buffy anymore, Angel, because it's always one of us with one of the other hosts. Yeah, that's a thing. So it's an unusual day, big day.
Good times.
It's a big day, guys. So just a reminder, if you guys want to get in touch with us, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at @re_watchable. And you can comment on this post, or not on this post, mypool.com. You can find us on Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. So before we get into discussing these episodes, as always, we're going to get you used to the sounds of our voices with some fun facts. Mai, let's start with you.
Well, we're going to stick with the usual fact. Hockey is great, and it makes me cry happy tears because we won last night.
That's it. That's Mai's evergreen fun fact.
Yes.
We can just plug it in every week.
Go sports.
All right.
I love dumb sports.
Brittany, what's your fun fact this week?
My fun fact is not a fun fact, but yesterday I was supposed to go and stay with Natalie in the city, and this morning I was supposed to also be with Natalie in the city, but I went out to celebrate a friend's birthday, and I had an allergy attack and had to go to a walk-in and get Benadryl on steroids because I can't breathe in this weather, and my allergies are really, really bad this year, and I've never experienced them this bad before, to the point where I've had to go lay down and knock myself out with medicine. So
that's just crazy.
I know. So we're on the mend. Everything's good. But I do actually have another fun fact. So Friday night, I went to go see a show and with my other friend, because everybody that I know in my life apparently was born between the end of April and the beginning of May. So I was celebrating another friend's birthday, and we went to this bar that we had to have a reservation for, and I was like, my friend likes to do that kind of like celebrity sighting type things, and I'm like, yeah, we'll go to this bar, we'll see like a D-lister, it'll be fine. It was not fine. Zachary Quinto was there, and then as we're leaving, Ben Stiller is there, Paul Rudd walks in with Martin Short, and I like, my friend was talking to me at the table, and she could see the people coming, and because my back was to where they would walk in, and they go and they sit two booths away from us, and her hand, she's talking, and her hand just comes across the table and grabs my arm and squeezes it super, super hard, and I'm like, what is happening? And then I see Paul Rudd, and I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And it was, he's very attractive, people, in real life. He is very, very attractive, and it's a little disarming. So that was an actual fun fact. Yep. So her insistence that we go to this bar paid off. I will never doubt her again. And then Ben Stiller and Martin Short were on SNL last night. So that was, you know, good times.
All right. Natalie, let's hear from you.
Well, yes, as Brittany said, I'm also in New York right now. And yeah, I feel like New York is such a, like the Broadway community in New York, like the kind of like, you know, the 10 blocks, you know, around Times Square where most of the Broadway theaters are. I always think it is the weirdest like glut of celebrity in the world, like, because LA, you know, they're whatever, they're probably all in, you know, everywhere behind closed doors or whatever, but like 11 p.m. or, you know, after a show comes out on in Broadway, it's like, you know, all of the celebrity actors who are leaving the show they performed in, and you know, lots of celebrity fans attending shows. It's like the weirdest little like trip out community ever. But I did have an interesting rewatchable related experience last night at the show that I saw, which was Angels in America, because your good friend from Pushing Daisies Days of Yore, Lee Pace, is in the current version of Angels in America, and other people are in it too who I love very much. But I saw the broadcast National Theatre version, the same production with Andrew Garfield, but the role that was played by Lee Pace right now was played by Russell Tovey in that version. So I didn't see Lee Pace do this version. Point is, I saw his penis a lot, because there's full frontal nudity in this play, a scene that was not in the National Theatre broadcast. They clearly like cut away from it, like, you know, cut to the other guy's reaction, and I think it might have cut to his butt. But no, there was a lot of full frontal penis of Lee Pace last night. I don't know if I've seen full frontal male nudity on stage before, especially not of a celebrity actor I already knew. So that was the thing that happened to me. I don't know if it was good, but it happened. So the pie maker's penis, I have seen.
That sounds like an episode title.
Yeah. I feel like it could have been an episode title. If it were there to be another season, I'm sure Brian Fuller might have went there.
Sorry to scar everyone for life.
That escalated quickly.
Yeah.
All right. My fun fact this week is the semester is over.
Yay.
I'm in the middle of a crap load of grading, but grades are due in like 4 days, and then I am done and I get to sleep, and I am so excited to actually get some sleep because I was teaching an 8 a.m. class this semester, and that is hell on earth, and I did not pick that, so I was just assigned it, and I'm so glad it's over. So summer, I'm so happy for summer, and mostly to sleep. So that is my fun fact. All right, let's get right into our episodes of Angel this week. First, we have episode 513, Why We Fight. And in this episode, Angel fights the Nazis and Spike is a brunette. We really have run out of ideas now.
No, wrong. I'm sorry, Ariana, I love you, but no. This is not running out of ideas. This is very, very, well, it might be a bit repetitive, but nearly all shows that deal with the supernatural in any way do a Nazi episode because of the historical truth that, and I'm like pointing and gesturing at the screen. Historically true, the Nazis did try to channel the occult. There was a channel of Nazism where like one of the leaders, I can't remember the name, this is true though, he was like really big into the occult, and they did try to channel supernatural. There was a research division that did try to channel the supernatural for the Nazis. So that is why like Teen Wolf had like a Nazi plot. Supernatural had like a Nazi episode, like supernatural occurrences, all that kind of thing. A lot of supernatural shows will do a Nazi episode, and it's because of this. So I would not call this running out of ideas. I'm almost surprised it took this long to do this one.
I kind of had a similar reaction where I was like, oh, finally we're doing this episode. Because like I wasn't waiting for it to happen, but it just made sense because I feel like I don't watch a lot of supernatural shows, but, you know, working for Hypeable and just, you know, being involved in any fandom adjacent to supernatural shows, you're bound to like see either a gift set or something from a time travel episode or like something with a Nazi theme. So like this just, it made sense. I was like, oh, okay, we're here now. Yeah, I agree. I don't think it was running out of ideas. It was more like, oh, we could check off this box because we're in a supernatural show.
You know, I think that there's a lot of interesting stuff in this idea of him vamping, is it Lawson or Dawson?
Lawson.
After his soul. You know, like I think that's actually a very significant reveal as well. Maybe it was like scraping the bottle of the barrel for like, oh, what haven't we done? But I don't think it was an uncreative solution to that problem.
All right. So the first thing I want to mention is, am I the only one who feels like this episode is out of sequence?
It's a bit random. It's definitely like being stuck in now. It's an episode that could have existed. Well, you probably would have wanted to have Spike there, but I guess you didn't really need to have Spike there. You could have done it in a season where Spike was not hanging around in person, you know, like it could have just been a memory of him.
I mean, I would even have been fine with this earlier in the season.
This year, yeah.
But literally, this episode is about finding purpose, and wasn't that the entire purpose of Cordelia's return in the previous episode? Which was successful. Angel was like motivated again, like,
yeah,
and then suddenly, oh, and then we're back to this. Like, this episode to me thematically fits the season, but it feels like it should have been like a couple episodes ago and not slotting in right after You're Welcome.
It's a bit random to come off the back of this. Yes.
Yeah, I agree, Caitlin. I think we were talking about this offline a little bit before we recorded, but like, Angel needs to be constantly told that he has a purpose and he has something to work towards. But I agree. I think that Cordelia should have been like the nail in the coffin to get him going, and we didn't need to like regress into this type of plot again. Like, if this happened one or two episodes before the Cordelia episode, it would have made a lot more, like, you know, this sort of like almost diminishes the Cordelia episode a little bit, being like, oh, that movie didn't work. Like, Angel still needs to be told that, you know, this is his purpose and all that. So I agree. I think it could have happened much earlier in the sequence.
All right. So just getting that off my chest.
No, I feel like it's kind of weird to, we're just moving on from that. Like, it definitely feels like something that could have, like, it's a kind of not a filler episode, but it's certainly not like a heavy plot arc episode. It is a self-contained, you know, what we'd call like a quote unquote monster of the week episode. It's not really a plot arc episode. So yeah, it could have really happened any time. So I'm not sure why they've sort of diverged to this now.
Yes, so oddly placed. And Ariana brings up an important point, which also makes this episode feel out of sequence, is they literally did not mention Cordelia at all, even though she just died. Why?
Oh, we know why.
Well, yes, we know why, but still why. Uh-huh. So rage at Joss basically for this, because
it's pretty offensive. And I mean, skipping into the next episode, just very, if we're talking about this subject, I quite like the Nina plot, but it is oddly, and how that carries on, but it is pretty, it's almost like offensively soon, given the circumstances, and it does feel a bit of like a fuck you. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's, and he's like, also waiting for Buffy's cookies. So.
Yeah.
It's sort like, of like, oh, we gave you the Cordelia closure, now let's move on as quickly as possible.
Juggle all the women.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're just going to forget she ever existed.
Exactly. Like, okay, we gave you your episode, now sweep it under the rug and never, ever, ever bring it up again.
Yeah. So that's terrible.
Without that baggage, I did like these two episodes a lot, but thinking about that now, because again, I haven't really watched this show since being very, you know, like when I first watched this, I was not aware of the drama, if you know what I mean. Like, and now, like after, you know, whatever, like 10 years of exposure to kind of like not only just the TV industry at large, but like the specifics of these seasons and what the hell was going on and stuff. It is, as standalones, I like both of these episodes a whole lot, but the behind the scenes implications of everything around these episodes in terms of, you know, what they chose to put in and what they chose not to put in or not to carry on with, like, you know, not to keep any service to, is kind of dodgy.
Yeah, and I tweeted about this earlier this weekend, sort of like I've been enjoying Angel more because I've sort of accepted that I'm never going to fully understand the overarching like story arcs of these characters, and they're never going to probably give me what I want. So I've been enjoying it a lot more, just watching an episode and being like, that was a thing that happened. So I don't know if that's a bad way to be watching it, but I guess after like 3 years, I'm sort of just exhausted. So I'm like, okay, I'm just going to enjoy this. I'm going to take in all the lovely Angel moments and horrible writing and live for all of Lauren's nicknames and just have a good time. I'm here to have a good time, guys. It's great. I've resigned myself to that sort of state of being, which is sad in a sense, but also it's making my experience a lot more enjoyable. Plus, I knew that I was working up towards smile time, so the anticipation really, really helped. Also, I was flipping through, so I have a book by Alan Sepinwall and Matt Zoller-Zietz called TV, the Book, and they sort of talk through the greatest American shows of all time. And I've been reading sections after I finish shows. So, like, it's a book where you can, like, read their rankings of the – they write a little blurb about each show. So I finally read the Buffy one, which because I kind of forgot about it. I was like, oh, I should go back to this book and read the Buffy analysis and where it's ranked and stuff like that. And then I was just flipping through, and they have little sections where they rank like the best finales of all time and the best like premieres and the best medical dramas, like, and it's usually like a top 5, top 10 list. And I've heard, you know, the super fans on the show being like, oh, well, I know what happens in Angel, and it's just blah. And I'm like, oh, okay, I still have no idea what happens in Angel. But I was reading the one list of the best finales of all time, and freaking Angel is on that list. Like, so I'm like really interested in what happens in the finale of Angel.
I don't have a problem with the finale of Angel. It's just,
I just wasn't expecting Angel to be on any list of any best anything. And it like really took me by surprise. So I got that going for me now. I mean, no, you guys don't have to weigh in because I know you're super fans, but I figured if I had a captive
hashtag no comment
audience,
yeah,
by myself, I wanted to bring it up.
Yeah, we're not there yet.
So. Let's bring it back to this episode.
Yeah.
Which apparently we care so much about that we're talking about a finale.
I do like the episode. I did like it.
I actually like this episode too. I just again feel like it's out of sequence. So let's talk about the past first. We have flashbacks. The flashbacks in this episode take place during World War II, so it's actually really close to the events of Are You Now or Have You Ever Been, which was the flashback to the hotel.
Yeah.
It was like 2 years before or after or something.
Yeah, the Are You Now or Have You Ever Been was in the 50s. And then World War II, obviously, is in the 40s. So we're very close. So Angel's attitude is very similar. His, you know, dispassionate, nature and everything, we see reflections of that episode as well in here. And so the fact that he's like sitting in this room by himself listening to jazz music, like brooding, just reminded me of kind of what he was doing in that episode as well. And it just feels very, very Angel to be doing that.
Sitting in a room brooding. That sums up Angel's character.
In some ways, he's been a very consistent character. But he is recruited by the U.S. government, basically. We have the Demon Research Initiative. So is this the precursor to the initiative in Buffy?
Ooh. Allegedly, according to the wiki and stuff, that it can certainly be assumed as such.
It would be very odd if it wasn't, I feel
like. Yeah.
The connection is pretty blatant. But this group knows about demons and monsters, and they know about Angel. And they forcibly recruit him to go help recover a sub underwater. And that is hauling some supernatural cargo, basically. So we've already said we kind of are surprised it took this long to get to this point, to do this plot. But what do we think about it taking place like underwater in a submarine?
It's sort of like the bad, like, you know, where you shouldn't ever write like a closed room episode, like, you know, like where the characters are basically like stuck in an elevator. So it's like an elevator episode. Like, you should never write that episode, but this is that episode where they're like, okay, we're going to lock you in a submarine and let's see what you can do with that. I thought it was interesting though, for a way to get like Angel being like the only person who could go because of the pressure of the water. And like, you know, they need someone supernatural to go and do this mission. So yeah, I thought it was fine. I like that most shows wouldn't be able to like do an underwater episode. So
Supernatural's also done a submarine World War II episode, like a bottle episode.
Okay, I take that back. Every show that's supernatural can do a submarine episode, but I've never seen it because I don't watch supernatural shows.
That's fair. And there is no, it's you know, not beyond the realm of belief that the inspiration came from this, as there is some crossover on the team.
So yeah, I am no longer surprised. I take it back.
What about you, Mai? What do you think?
Budget savings, probably.
Yeah, well, that's what a bottle episode is for, is it not? Yes, you know, like
exactly.
Yeah.
And also the pun of it being a bottle.
Not a literal bottle.
All right, so we've got the fact that the SS was taking these demons, including Spike, Angel finds out, and they wanted to experiment on them because they're trying to create an army of monsters, which would not have turned out well had that panned out. So Angel comes in and is trying to help the surviving American soldiers take the submarine back. Things do not go well, and Angel kind of ends up working alongside Captain America Light in this guy named Lawson. And what did we think of Lawson in the past?
Oh, I don't know, generic. Like, I don't know if there's anything specific that stood out for, you know, for him as a standout
nice hair
soldier, you know, like, you know, if there was anything that made him out of the norm, I guess, you know, he was a good old patriot, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It was very cookie cutter. But he was cute, you know, his little, when they like first meet and, you know, he does his little like, we're all that's left and there's not much we could do. Like, I was like, oh, okay. But like, you know, having seen him in the present and then cutting back to this kid, you know, I guess making him behave like that sort of shows like, you know, okay, you're invested because you're like, what could have happened to him to get him to the point that he's at now? So, you have to project a lot. You have, as an audience member, what am I in the theater? You have to project a lot onto, this blank kind of, you know, will do anything to fight type of character to see, figure out what happened to him to get him to the point where he's trying to hang everyone in the offices.
So we see very much this episode as kind of Lawson in his, you know, upright soldierness is all about doing what's right. And we get this kind of conflict between you don't win a war by doing whatever it takes you do. You win by doing what's right. Lawson wants to do what's right. We end up having to. Angel does whatever it takes.
Yeah.
Because we have pretty much a disaster. Lawson is stabbed and is dying. He's the only one who can save the ship. So Angel, who, remember, has his soul now, turns him so he can save the ship. This is the only person he's ever turned when he had his soul. So aww, this is
poor baby Angel.
So what do we think the show wants us to take from the fact that we've got this character that Angel turned when he had a soul, that he was willing to do whatever it took at that time? Like, why go with this story that Angel had to turn this kind of innocent kid when he had a soul?
Well, I think it like plays into the fact that of sort of like what we've been dealing with this whole season, where he's in Wolfram and Hart, and in order to do the most good, he has to work with almost the most evil. So this is like that on a much smaller scale before Wolfram and Hart. So it's like nothing, it's sort of showing that like nothing's ever going to change. In order to save the most people, he had to do one of the worst things. And, you know, no matter what his action, no matter how hard he's trying, it's never going to be fully good or fully evil. Like, you know, he's very much in the gray as much as he wants to be in like the black and white. And so this is just it on like a micro scale. I mean, Wolfram and Hart is like this huge, obviously, corporation where like, you know, he's just trying to like, in that episode a few weeks ago, like, you know, he's just trying to keep like two warring tribes from killing each other. And it's like, he's dealing with, you know, people going like saving the evil. I don't know if that's the best way to phrase it, but like, you know, making sure that, you know, evil can still operate, that way he could still do some good. And here he's turning someone into a vampire and, but saving people. So it's a tricky, slippery slope for Angel constantly, and it's probably never going to change.
That's depressing.
Sorry. You're super fans. You could tell me, no, Brittany, it's going to get better.
I mean, do things ever get better? In the Buffyverse.
I can sing the song. Things can only get better. That's a lie. They can definitely get worse.
I just really liked the prolonged silence. And then that's depressing.
I mean, we're definitely seeing this continued idea of, you know, what it takes versus what is right. And we've seen that has apparently even affected Angel's relationship with Buffy, who Andrew implies no longer trusts him because he's working at Wolfram and Hart. I question whether she was the one who told him that and it wasn't Giles. And we know Giles has never liked Angel, but you know, whatever.
It's interesting. I mean, Lawson never came after Angel before now. He's come after him now when he's at Wolfram and Hart. It's not like a big coincidence, you know. It's not like a big, this is when I happened to catch up with you. So there's some questions about, I guess, Lawson and, like, the little piece of soul he has, like how he's never been, like, fully free of, you know, like, doing his vampiric evils. Like, he's always had, like, issues with it because, I guess, Angel infected him with a bit of caring or something. And so is this, like, a justice mission for him as well as a revenge mission, like, given that he waited until, you know when he got the news of Angel becoming corrupt as opposed to being like a good, quote unquote, good guy?
Well, here's the question. Is it really a revenge mission? Because Angel says to Spike at the end of the episode, that's why he came. Mm. His last words are, give me a mission.
Mm.
So is revenge really why Lawson came in the first place? I don't think so.
No, I don't either, but I feel like I want to see a whole nother, well, if you know, if I could be bothered, like a whole nother episode of what his life has been between the time that Angel kicked him off the sub and today, you know?
Yeah, well, and, you know, coming from being that, you know, from that military life, maybe he did, like Angel does, you know, he needs someone to give him purpose, sort of like Riley, you know, like when you're living in that sort of state, you need direction and a mission and a purpose. Yeah. And we're dealing with that with Angel, you know, oh, I need purpose. Am I doing the right thing? Am I like, but Angel is the leader. And so, you know, since he is Lawson's sire, like maybe he catches wind of what's been going on, you know, he comes and he's like, give me a mission, you know, like it's not maybe not revenge, but like, you know, you're giving direction to all these other people and not me anymore. You sired me and then I've been on my own. So I don't know if that's reading too much into the military type story that we're dealing with, but I also did not get the sense that it was for revenge.
My idea of thoughts.
I'm just a little annoyed, actually, because it's just another thing that in their whole vampire creation thing that doesn't actually make sense. Since the whole it's the demon who takes over your body bullshit. Because clearly the demon didn't take over the body.
I think that I've always thought when we were doing Buffy, that comment.
It's such a cop-out.
Not even a cop-out. I think that it was potentially a belief of some people, like the Watchers Council or whatever. I think it was something they told themselves to make it more black and white than it actually is, if you know what I mean. I feel like the way that I work that out for myself is that it's not, you know, when it says, you know, you're not looking at your friend, you're looking at the thing that killed them, you know, that thing from back in Jesse or whatever, way back. I've always thought that that's something that some people believed, and I guess, you know, if that's what they then went on to, you know, pass down to the Slayers and it became a popular belief. But that it was a way to make things more black and white than the real truth of it. That it wasn't even really a retcon, that it was a perspective that those people held that was not really true, and that part of what we discover during the series of Buffy is that that's not true. However, they don't really like spell that out as like, hey, we learned this lesson. It's just sort of what I think the show showed us.
But we have seen Angel's demon on Pylea.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
And also Angelus, what is he then? A, like, multiple personality?
Well, that's sort of how they're treating it.
That's what makes Angelus so different to so many other vampires, because it honestly feels like he's the outlier. It really feels like every other vampire we've ever met, you know, we've got Holden, you know, with Buffy in the graveyard, Harmony. Mm-hmm. Any vampire that we meet that either we knew or they kind of knew before they were a vampire, it's just not the same. And, you know, it's really interesting that the only other one that's even comparable to Willow even comparable to Angel and Angelus was doppelganger Willow. And we know that Willow is like a kind of really crazy repressed bitch, which we've experienced deeply. So it's interesting to see the kind of people that really turn different as a vampire versus the people who are just like, yeah, I'm totally myself. I just have like a different driving force now that's a bit evil and killy, you know?
All very interesting.
And frustrating.
We know that Angel, in the past, turned Lawson. They saved the ship, and all that fun stuff. In the present, then, Lawson comes to Wolfram and Hart. He kidnaps Fred and Gunn and Wesley and puts them like on a chair with a noose around their necks, and then threatens.
Charming.
Angel. Yeah, it's very lovely and pleasant.
Yeah, it's a great look on him.
So, as we were kind of saying, like, if this was not revenge, like, what is it? And what purpose are we serving at this point with Lawson's presence?
I was gonna say the suicide mission, but it's a little bit overboard.
I mean, I don't disagree.
Yeah, but he already had that in hand when
Angel busted the... Well, like suicide by cop kind of thing. Like,
yeah, but Angel was already going to do that when he busted the table. And then Lawson was like, I have a plan.
Well, I think there was part of him, at least, that was hoping to die, but I think he wanted to like go through with this entire
spiel.
Yeah, because there maybe Angel's like bit of soul made him melodramatic. Like maybe Angel. He
hoping he had a little bit of soul.
I mean, or it could be he really was trying to get something out of Angel. I feel like in some way he's looking for answers more than anything.
Remorse.
And he's getting, when he doesn't get it, suicide is, like, suicide by Angel is kind of his best option. Because he seems, like, miserable, honestly. Like, he says, like, he tried to do the whole evil thing, like, killing and torturing, and it just was never fulfilling.
He's impotent. Evil impotence.
Basically. So he is like, he's empty in a lot of ways. He has no purpose. And I feel like when he's not getting it from Angel. Okay, Mitch.
Excuse, what?
What?
For evil.
When he's not getting, you know, the purpose. I feel like, you know, what's left? He has nothing. He has no prospects. He has no interest in living. I find it interesting, like, even the way he's costumed, he almost seems like he's not even totally present. Like, it's very, I guess, just the colors are really muted, and he doesn't even fully seem present.
He's kind of wearing what he was wearing in the 40s, isn't it?
Yeah, and his hair never changed. So why do we need this story right now, or do we?
I think it kind of goes back to, you know, underscoring Angel in his problems with, like, accepting, you know, his role as, I mean, he's always had a hard time being, like, it's so weird, because when Angel is not the leader, then he's miserable about it, and when he's the leader, he's like, oh, the burden. So, like, you know, there's no happy medium with Angel, so to have this moment and be like, okay, clearly no one is comfortable in the, like, lot they've been dealt in life, you know, it's, again, reaffirming, like, you know, needing a purpose and having a purpose and being okay with that being the purpose that you're given. And again, if this episode happened earlier, like we were talking about, it would have made a little bit more sense to underscore the Cordelia episode, but I don't know if we necessarily, we needed this episode, but, like, you know, it could have happened any time. It could have happened a couple seasons ago. I mean, it's just underscoring everything that we've been dealing with Angel since we've met him, I think.
Yeah. Maybe it's just a reminder that he has a history of being dumb.
Yeah, that too. I think we, like, having episodes that flash back to when Angel has a soul, doesn't have a soul, and where these events played out in his life are great reminders of what's going on in the present and how his character has gone through a lot, because I think we kind of, well, at least I do, kind of forget how long Angel's been around and all the stuff that, you know, he's done and seen and had to deal with. So I like a good reminder of that.
I think it's interesting to take this event and put it alongside what happened in the episode in the 50s, mm-hmm. and see, like, that these two events compound each other, and it sort of, you can kind of see where Angel would go downhill. He has turned a good man into a vampire, so obviously he's has that guilt. Because he has a soul, and he was already miserable. And then he has this event at the Hyperion where he lets this monster kill a bunch of people.
Let's do rewatchable redox, all the flashback episodes in order. Just saying.
Our next show
is Angel.
To Angel. Yes.
I just think it's interesting to, like, I feel like it, this fits our timeline of him, of what we know becomes his, like, descent.
Lowest, like, point.
He's kind of cyclical, because he did that in the war, and then in the 50s he...
Maybe he was, yeah, and maybe he was still so sad, so very, very sad in the 50s, because he was still a decade later, you know.
Yeah, but when does he...
Himself
the...
turning the... Lawson, maybe he's been guilty about that for 8 years or whatever, which sends him, he's like, oh, I can never truly be good, might as well just eat this guy.
Yeah, but when does he eat the shop guy in, when Faith is in his memories?
That's in the 50s.
I feel like that's the 60s.
50s
he
or
has
60s.
A mullet.
Maybe it's the 70s.
So, like,
I don't know.
10, God, 15 years he plummets and...
Yeah, I guess. And he needs a reminder of, like, you know...
Eat some rats.
Yeah.
Needs a purpose. Meets a blonde.
Awkward. Our international titles for this episode, German, we have Underwater. And
creative.
French is The Submarine.
Wow.
Fair.
Very poetic and insightful. So unless we have any other thoughts on this one, let's move into favorite scenes and favorite lines. My favorite scene is just kind of the Prince of Lies' general existence.
Oh, what a gem.
His fingernails are too long.
When he laughs, and everyone kind of is like looking at him, and he kind of morphs into... his general existence made me happy.
He's played by the same dude who played that creepy gnarl guy who ate Willow's skin, by the way.
Oh, gross.
Yeah. But my favorite scene is Prince of Lies laughing and Angel checking out Spike's ass when he climbs out of the
sun. What?
He does.
Did that happen?
There's a look.
Okay.
It's implied.
Natalie?
I basically just liked Spike on the submarine being like just very casual. Like the, you know, like his, he's, yeah, he's evil. He's killing people, but he's just like so chill and not really like, he's not really, you know, he's not really dedicated to murder and terror. The bit that I am, that really hammered this home was when Lawson was interrogating the Nazi, and he was like, "You talk, I'll menace." And it was just like very casual, and it was like, I don't know. I just find it his kind of just like, yeah, might as well attitude. Very, very amusing.
I like too, like when he's introducing Angel to the other monsters, he's like proud of him. He's like, yeah, he's jealous. Angelus.
I mean, it's definitely something to mention that I don't know when you... Does Spike know Angel has a soul at this point? Does he care? Is he just like, oh, you're still my Angel? Fine. Or does he not know Angel has a soul?
I think he figures it out at the end.
Yeah. He certainly figures out like what side he's been recruited for, but yeah.
I also just really likes that Spike wants to be called Captain.
Yeah.
And he wants to drive the sub.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got some small needs. That's the thing.
Call me Captain.
Spike has small plans. He has small needs. He just wants to have a bit of fun and that's it. Like it's, you know.
Like in the next episode, he just needs a car.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just get Spike a car.
All right, and Brittany.
Mine was seeing Spike's hair, because like it was just very shocking that it was not, you know, overly bleached. I was like, oh, okay.
It's too dark.
It's so dark.
All right, favorite lines. Mine was when Lawson shows up in Angel's office and he's like, aren't you going to ask me how I got in here? And Angel goes, no, you'd be amazed at how many people break into this building on a regular basis.
Freaking seriously, does nobody else work night?
And I just, you know, in the Arrowverse fandom, we laugh at how many people break into Star Labs and the Arrow Cave all the time. We're like, they have the worst security. So I'm like, Wolfram and Hart is Star Labs.
Uh-huh.
Okay, there's no security for this evil law firm, apparently. So that made me laugh. And then Lawson's all disappointed. He's like, but I had this whole spiel. Like, come on. My, your favorite line.
The most comic booky exchange. I'm telling you, he's some sort of super soldier, like Steve Rogers or Captain America. Steve Rogers is Captain America, you eight ball.
And then Joss Whedon went on to direct The Avenger.
Well, yeah, I mean, this was going to be my line, obviously, and I can't believe no one left it for me out of respect. Like, it's just very rude. Like, I just don't understand why you would think that was okay. But that being said, I was going to say, because this is interesting to me, because there's been a couple of Captain America references in the Buffyverse. And it's at a time where you had to really be a comic book nerd, like you had to follow comic books to know that, because Captain America was nowhere, like not a mainstream pop culture icon at all, and certainly not Steve by name. It's something that you'd have to know, like, as a comic reader, and this was just after Cap was invented in 1941, his comics started coming out. Side note, very, very interestingly, his comics about fighting Nazis came out before America officially joined the war. So it was actually like a protest. It was a protest comic. Basically, it was a very political protest comic because it was showing this patriot before America had chosen, like doing the stuff in Nazi Germany before America chose to enter the war after Pearl Harbor was, you know, attacked them directly. So anyway, there's a lot of anyone who says that it should not be a political figure is talking out their ass. But point is, this comic reference is obviously makes, like, you know, household name sense to us now, but it would not have when the episode was airing. So it would have only been people who really followed like comics on paper, not, you know, not anything else.
Whedon is a nerd, so.
Yeah, that's at the time, that's a pretty deep dive nerd reference.
Mr. Fury.
Yeah.
All right, Natalie, what line did you choose?
I didn't. That was my line.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Brittany.
Mine was the exchange between Angel and Spike where Angel's like, you were captured at a free virgin blood party. And Spike's just like, I know. Who would have thought? One minute I'm asking a fellow why all the virgins look like gobbles. Next, I'm stuck in a box on this cursed ship. Like, classic Spike.
I can't believe nobody picked the exchange where, and I left this because I thought someone else would take it, where Angel says, I'm not getting trapped at the bottom of the sea. And Spike says, I'm not getting experimented on by his government.
That's a good one, too.
Literally both those things happen. Good job.
Yeah, suppose that's, okay. No, that took me a second. That's sad. Now it's sad. Now I'm sad. Okay. I will say I did like you guys like the Prince of Lies. I liked Rasputin's lover. He was ridiculous also. So yeah.
He's so offended that Angel's never heard of him.
Yeah, I did like them casually introducing as well, not just Spike, yeah, being like, you know, this is the Prince of Lies. This is, you know, like it's all very, very casual, like introducing the humans to them as well. So,
yeah. No one questions it. He's just like, Prince of Lies.
And all this darkness.
Good times. Speaking of good times,
the best times.
Let's go into smile time.
Oh, no.
In this episode, Angel turns into a puppet, and Ariana says, I take back what I said earlier. Now we have officially exhausted all ideas. Ariana is really spicy in this episode. I'm not here for it.
Takes.
Who would hate this? I just don't understand who could hate this.
I don't understand.
I've been waiting for this episode for so long.
So,
this is the most Ben Edlund episode that ever Ben Edlund.
Yeah, it's just this is just the I don't even want to think about what that man is capable of because you know, this is just tiny baby Ben Edlund, like, having a go at being weird, not, like, you know, fully-fledged, powerful Ben Edlund. You know, this man is an alien. He's an alien from, like, a hyper-fantastical future because, like, he's just nuts. I've interviewed him, and he's just nuts. Like, it's wonderful. But he's fucking crazy. Like, he's just like a space cadet, like, not on the same astral plane, his mind. It just goes to different places. And it's in a nice way, but he's freaking crazy. And so, yeah, it's great. Anyway.
Yes. So this episode is crazy and it's perfect and everything is wonderful. And I don't know what Ariana's talking about.
Yeah. He wrote a Nazi episode for Supernatural as well. He wrote he was a production consultant on this season of Angel and he put a Nazi that Nazi occult episode in Supernatural. He wrote that one, but he's written much, much, much weirder ones than that as well. So let's the puppet situation is it happened.
Situation. So let's, before we actually get into the puppets, let's talk about what's surrounding the puppet situation, then we can delve into the puppets. So we see Nina again in this episode. She's been coming in every month for her werewolf transformation, and she's super into Angel because, you know, she has eyes. and Angel is not recognizing the signals because he's dumb.
Also, because his girlfriend died two episodes ago.
Yes, also that.
And his other girlfriend doesn't trust him.
Yep.
But, you know, we don't talk about those things, apparently.
Yeah, we're just going to pretend that's not, like, a weight on him right now.
Yes.
Just that he's awkward and dumb like girls. Like, none of that's relevant. So, you know, whatever.
Hand wave.
But Nina, you know, is blonde, so apparently he should be into her. So, she kind of invites him to breakfast and he's super awkward. And then he goes to see Wes and Wes like yells at him for not recognizing the signals, even though Wesley, you know, knows that Cordelia just died. Good job, Wes. And then Wes, of course, is a hypocrite because he can't see that Fred is interested in him, which is the dumbest dumb thing to ever dumb.
Ugh, God.
Not into this at all.
That was so annoying. But he, all right. There's a comment later in Adiana's discussion where she says that Wes's turtlenecks are really working for her. I was so into like the stubbled Wes, but now that he's like clean shaven, I'm like, damn, he looks so good.
Now?
Yeah, now.
Oh. Eh. Like he went up from the from what you already liked.
I thought that like he went up.
He peaked. Yeah. You thought he peaked.
I thought he peaked and then he topped it. I don't know how he did it.
Okay.
I don't know why it like hit me in this episode. I'm like, he looks so good. Yeah, so that's surrounding the puppets.
Yeah, so there's all this guys are being stupid about women sending them signals in this episode. So that's going on. And I'm super not into anything about Wes and Fred.
Mm-hmm. I'm not really either. But the Knox thing is kind of a weird redirect in that, like, Knox has a weird plot, like that sort of goes all over the place during this season. But apparently the actor didn't know until this part that was that. He didn't know till this episode that, like, it wasn't going to be a romantic fulfillment, so that was quite... Obviously, we knew he liked her, but apparently they had this whole thing off-screen that didn't work out. So, I don't know, what if you preferred a Knox OTP at the end of the day?
No, but I think... I don't think I would have. Like, I don't mind Wes and Fred, but I feel like it's been so horrible, like, you know... Oh, Wes has been pining after her. Why? Like, we had that whole thing, and now he's oblivious to it. It's like, it's just such a, it's handled so bad that I, like, just don't care either way. I'm just like, just put someone together at this point because you're just really bad at writing around it sort of deal. So, yeah, I don't hate them. I don't love them, but kind of is what it is at this point.
The narrative has also spent a fair amount of time like telling us why they would not be good together, like overtly they should not be together, and then they're like, hey, let's push them together. Wouldn't that be fun?
It's not like, oh, it's not like they're playing from a, oh, these two people hate each other and would never work. It's sort of like, these two people can coexist together and are friends, and also it would never work. Let's try to see what happens if we do try to make it work. Like, all right, there's a different way to make me more invested in them going against the odds, but they didn't write it well.
I'm Shocker. I miss Fred and Gunn. Those cute kids. I miss them.
Oh, and now, are we not going to deal with Gunn's head? Was that?
Yep, that is this episode.
But there were little hints of it in the last one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Gunn's, all the knowledge that he was implanted is starting to fade. So he goes to the doctor and he's like, oh, yep, it's, you know, not a permanent link. And Gunn wants to make it permanent. And so he has to make a deal to do some under the table evil work for this evil doctor to get this connection permanent with the senior partners, this information.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting where, like, the doctor, creepy doctor guy was like, yeah, they wanted you to have it, and now they changed their minds. And I was like, interesting. So are they, like, they're taking it away?
We like, just don't know.
Okay, fair.
I just side-eyed my microphone.
Like, it's not even like, you know, oh, yes, he's doing evil things. It's like, but now he's also defying what the senior partners want. So, like, that's another layer that we're going to have to probably deal with.
Unless the senior partners are, like, wanting him to do that to make him, like, reliant on it.
Yeah.
But that just seems odd to me because, like, of all of them, Gunn's about the only one who is the most wanting to stick with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it seems like he needs that, like, connection the least of the whole team.
They gave him something he likes and now they're taking it away. Well, yeah,
made him feel kind of important, I guess. Like, I don't know if it's just ego or if it's more than that and it's like purpose, you know?
The first taste was free.
Well, I think the kind of the start, you know, it's the start of, well, you know, we've heard a few little hints about it before that the company is, you know, has potentially has the power to start corrupting everyone a bit. Like everyone starts liking it a bit too much and, you know, in the different ways. And we saw a bit of that before. So, yeah.
Yeah, but the groundwork for him feeling insecure was laid long ago at the hotel. So that's not the Wolfram and Hart corruption. That's the toxic pancake.
So I guess we will have to wait and see.
If Doctor is creepy.
Oh, so creepy.
Very creepy. Do we think what Gunn has to do for him is going to bite him in the butt?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't it always?
You mean we're not going to completely forget about it?
Oh, you never know.
Yeah, actually, you never know. Yeah,
yeah, that's true. Guess we'll see. All right. So, puppets.
Yes. Okay, finally.
Cold open, please talk about that.
You've got this poor kid who is sick and he's watching this TV show called Smile Time, and then the puppets start talking to him and telling him to come to the TV, and then they like suck out his life force, and then he lands in the creepiest position ever, and I'm not okay with like the looks at the kids' faces.
So terrifying.
I'm not okay with what the TV was saying. And the way it was.
Yeah, that was so weird.
Because it's my
Tommy.
Tommy, because I have to make everything about this. Tommy is a supernatural actor as well, or was in the first couple of seasons of Supernatural. He played Dean in a couple of young flashback episodes. Dean. Another, pardon?
The right Dean.
No, I like the other one. I like the older one much better. The one who was him in Bad Boys. But this kid played Dean in another episode, interestingly, like about like paralyzed children, like about this epidemic of paralyzed children. So that's random, but true. Yes. Carry on.
And that's your supernatural fun fact for smile time.
Yeah. Mai, did you want to say more about the creepy things that the puppets were saying?
I think I've covered it.
I don't actually remember what they were saying.
It's so. Sort of like they were making very pleasurable sounds as like, touching the television.
And it was like,
come touch it.
Definitely. Boy, yep. Was all it, then, wasn't it?
It was really the
sexual.
Ugh. Yeah, that was not great.
It was a bad touch on the TV.
All right, so we've got these puppets who are draining life force or something from these kids. And they're kind of doing it one at a time, but this gets on Fred's radar and she thinks it might be some kind of mystical epidemic. And Angel thinks like, oh, this is the perfect distraction from my feelings. So let's work on this. And then he goes and investigates and he finds this guy under this like egg thing that explodes. And then he wakes up like having been thrown into a pile of boxes and suddenly he's a puppet.
The best.
So let's, can we talk about the Angel puppet?
It's perfect and so I love well him.
Like the narrowed brow and it's like a permanent frown.
When it
his
walks,
mouth goes oh all God. The way all the way down. It's so good.
And the hair like moves. Oh my gosh. It was so beautiful. And the little like jacket, I can't, like everyone was saying, it's so cute. And it was just so perfect to like David Boreanaz did such a good like voiceover work where he's just like, stop it, like, don't say I'm cute. the broodiest puppet to ever brood.
And when he gets angry at the show and his brows go further and further down.
Oh, and he just starts to like shake.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, so incredible.
I want one.
I have like I love puppets. Like I like the Muppets are one of my favorite things of all time, and I find puppets so funny because like this puppet, Angel's puppet, was very expressive and like, but you know, like Kermit's eyes don't really move, but like you could do so much with like his mouth, like just making different expressions, and I don't know why I find them so funny. This ratio, the big purple thing that squeaked, I had to pause the episode. I was laughing so hard. Like when they're doing like the big, like, you know, creepy, like not interrogation, but where
they're doing the breakdown in the war room table, exactly. Like strategy thing.
Anytime ratio squeaked. I had to like, I was dying. I laughed so hard. I watched this episode 3 times. I love it. I'm probably going to
watch it. We can watch it again today.
I'm probably going to watch it many, many more times. It is so funny. I just love puppets so much. It was just it hit all the right notes for me. Just everything about it. The fight, Angel like dying and Lorne yelling for a doctor. And the stuffing. I cannot. And then when Wes like rips Ratio's like horn out and the little like cotton balls are I can't. It's so good, guys. And then just watching Wes fight this thing, oh my God. Such a great choice. This is such a good episode.
Yeah, so turns out, they obviously they think it's the people behind Smile Time because nobody expects the puppets.
It's better than Glee's puppet episode, that's for sure.
God. Oh, that was a nightmare.
It was one of the worst things that's ever happened to me as a TV viewer.
I had forgotten that until
I
said
lucky
it.
You. Yep.
I forgot
Thanks
about it.
Thanks for bringing it back.
Lucky you.
All right, so
the good puppets.
They you know, they go and confront the guy behind the creator of Smile Time, who, fun fact, is played by David Fury.
Yeah, it is. It is. What's this called? Ramkin, is it? No.
Framkin.
Framkin, yeah. That's cool.
And just, you know, random thing, David Fury was, they got the mustard out in Once More with Feeling. So.
Yeah, he also now co-EPs The Tick with Ben Edlund. And this is like the first time they work together this episode. Like, obviously David Fury's been involved with Buffyverse, but like, I think he met Ben Edlund when Ben Edlund, because Ben Edlund wrote and directed this episode, because I don't think anyone else probably would have been able to pull that off. And yes, he directed Fury as Framkin in this episode, and now they make a show together.
Fun times. So, you know, they go and see Framkin, and he's not very helpful. Turns out Framkin is as much a puppet as anything.
So gross.
That's so creepy. Oh,
so gross. The sound effects are even worse.
Yep, it's very disgusting.
But they eventually figure out that they made a demon deal, basically, because the ratings had dropped so much that they needed help. And so the deal was, let these demons out. The demons took the form of the puppets, and then the puppets took over and are now stealing the life forces of children.
But like, the dog actually cares about the show.
I know, he was just like, I'm working on this song with it. I was like, oh my gosh.
It's funny that I like that the dog cares about the show. It's like the motivation is pure.
Oh. I like too when they're at the war room scene and the lead puppet's like, screw edutainment, and yeah, they both go like, they're like, everyone's really shocked at that. Oh, that's great. So Angel's a puppet. They have to go fight the other puppets. They said if they can go destroy this, like the nest egg, as they call it, which is where all the life force goes, if they can go destroy that, they'll stop the demons and Angel will turn back into a human. And so they go, and you have this hilarious sequence, like, because the puppets are trying to like steal all the children's life force at this point. And you've got like Angel puppet and Gun fighting these puppets, and like the puppets are cursing at each other, and it's all on TV, and it's amazing. Everything's perfect, and they're fighting the puppets, and Angel turns into a vampire, and he like, aww, the puppet turns into a vampire too. It's the greatest thing ever. So puppets fighting, and poor Gun is trying to fight off this puppet like as himself, and ends up like throwing her at the camera. Like when we pan to him, he's got like an arm.
Yeah.
He's like holding an arm.
Everything about this, and like the spike fight in the beginning with the puppet, yes, just watching him like wrestle with this little thing. He's just laughing the whole time, and then he comes out of the elevator and he's bleeding.
Everything is perfect. But obviously they destroy the nest egg, but Angel does not immediately turn back.
No, he goes it's on gonna a take date a few with days. Nina.
I'm like, oh there... yeah, Nina tried to eat him, yep, as a puppet.
I was like, no, Nina, bad Nina, bad Nina.
And so he has to sew himself back up.
Oh my god, the threat. I can't.
And then he's like, Nina. Stupid thread. And then the puppet gets scars on its face. Oh. And she wakes up and there's like fuzz all over the cage and she thinks she's eaten him.
I cannot believe this was an episode of television that was allowed to exist.
His emotional range is proportional to his size.
Yes. Oh my god. I mean, that seems like his emotional range.
Yeah.
General.
When he's not a puppet.
It's amazing.
But Nina, for some reason, decides to go on a date with him while he's still a puppet. So, you know, she sees him for who he truly is, apparently.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, I think he's more fun as a puppet, but...
Just, and everybody's pure reaction, like, when Angel, like, you know, says to them, like, you know, like, he calls everybody in and he shows them that they're a he's a puppet, and, like, you know, they're trying not to laugh, and then, you know, he's just getting angrier and angrier, but, like, you know... That's how they almost react to him when he's not a puppet. Like, oh, Angel's so cute. And he's like, I'm not cute. Stop it. But then to see them put that reaction on a, like, towards a puppet, it was just, it was wonderful. Like, Wes trying not to laugh was probably one of my top five favorite moments of not only this episode, life. But, like, just life. Just
when he hugs Fred's legs.
Oh, my God.
And when Fred, like, messes with his hair and he's like, you're fired.
Yeah, that's another group when we just, like, he has no authority over these people anymore since he's a puppet. And he's just like, oh, you're fired. Like, he's so angsty and wonderful. Oh, my God. I can't wait to watch this episode again.
Is it better that it was only Angel, or would we have liked to have seen the entire team turn into puppets?
Oh, no, it's only Angel.
Puppet Angelus.
Oh my God, I would die.
What a time to be alive.
I have some fan fiction to go right now. Puppet Angelus.
I have a few facts, one of which is that the scene with Spike and Angel's elevator fight, I have seen James Masters speak about that at a panel, being like, he got the script and he was like, are you serious? He's like, I'm going to look like an idiot. Like, this is embarrassing. And Ben was like, no, James, don't worry. Like, I've written it. Trust me, you're going to steal a show. Like, you've written it. I've written it so you'll come in. Because, I don't know, he had, like, limited time to do that episode, which is why he only has that, like, one scene. And he was like, no, you're going to come in and trust me, you're going to do it. And it is going to steal the show. I've written it to make you look amazing. And I guess that's all in, like, the fact that he's, like, laughing the whole time and stuff like that. And yeah, so that was good. And yeah, the puppets are obviously done by the Jim Henson, like, shop and, like, the Jim Henson actors, like most of them. So that's also cool. They went pretty hardcore with the puppets.
I saw something that said that the Jim Henson people were, like, really enjoying being able to be
dirty and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just love how they go from, like, the kids show to, like, them cursing at each other. It's all the puppets, yeah, like, yelling nasty things at each other.
Yeah.
Guys, this is a thing that happened, and it's the best thing ever.
I've been waiting so long.
Me too.
I've been waiting over a year because I don't know how I saw – it was, like, completely – I wasn't looking for a GIF. I wasn't doing anything. It was just, like, I saw an Angel puppet, and I text Natalie, and I was like, is this a real thing? Because if so – we need to get to this episode as fast as possible. And it was, like, a year ago. Like, we were still deep in Buffy. And I was like, I don't know if I can actually wait for this. And it was – I forget what I saw. I saw something – well, then I did some deeper research because I really couldn't wait. And so I saw a gift set of Angel being like, I'm made of felt and my nose comes off. And I was that – that kept me going for, like, a good couple of months. And then I saw another thing where Spike was like, you're a bloody puppet. And I was like, yeah. I'm like, I need this. I've never needed anything from these shows, but I needed smile time.
Didn't David keep the puppet?
I'm sure, you know, wouldn't you? Like, why wouldn't
you? I hope so.
Doesn't I hope he was child? Allowed to. Like, I hope he shows it to his little child, like, you know?
Yeah. I really hope he was allowed to keep it.
Oh, love everything about this. If I ever see David Boreanaz, this is all I'm ever going to talk about. Well, maybe some Angelus. Like, I'll save one question for Angelus, but, you know.
You could ask about Angelus puppet.
Yeah, yes, okay.
What would Angelus be like as a puppet? Yes. it is the best thing ever.
I love this episode.
Yeah, and there's, like, so much going on around it that, like, is not great, but it doesn't even matter. And I love when, like, they cut to the puppets when they're not on Smile Time and he's got, like, really big bags under his eyes and he's like
cigarette behind his ear.
Oh my gosh, it's so great. Oh, but Ratio, MVP. Man, that squeak killed me. Oh my gosh, it was so good.
Yeah.
All right. Do we need to do any more flailing over this, or should we move on to favorite scenes and favorite lines?
If we move on, we're going to talk, we're going to flail a little more, okay. So it'll be fine.
International titles.
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah. The international titles are good. Oh my God. Is that the German word for a great word. That is a brilliant word. Okay.
What? I can't see the, so I can only go one screen at a time. What does it say?
The German international title is, I can't say it in German, also, but
Angriff der Mörderpuppen. So it's attack of the murder puppet.
But murder puppet is a word, like Mörderpuppen. I love it. I love it so much.
So attack of the killer puppet or attack of the murder puppet is the German, and the French is the evil puppets.
Oh, I love it.
So quality. Those are much better than the last international titles.
They leave nothing to the imagination.
Nope. All right. Favorite scenes. Mine was the Spike and Puppet Angel fight and how Spike
valid.
Is, like, so amused. And then Angel, like, bites him. And then they end up in the elevator. It's just sounds of, like, them fighting. And then the doors open. And Spike is, like, on the ground bleeding.
And I love how he's just laughing and laughing and laughing, and then he gets hit once. He's like, wait, ow! Like, this puppet is actually hurting me.
Angel's little walk.
Oh my God. They stayed on that for so long, and I was so happy for every second we got to watch that.
So delightful. I love everything about it. And then he's like, I just need a car. He's like, get him a car. He's like, you heard the puppet. so good. Your favorite scene
is, of course, when Angel vamps out as a puppet because he has a lot of demon in him.
Oh, so good. Natalie.
Sorry, I have it here on my phone, but not in the thing, when Lorne is carrying, attacked Angel, through, like, Puppet Angel after he's attacked by Nina. He's like, it's okay, little guy, you're going to make it, just hang in there. And it's just so stupid.
Is there a Geppetto in the house?
Yeah, that. And it's just so ridiculous, and I just can't. It's just a gift.
Amazing. Brittany.
Besides every single moment of this episode, I would say probably Angel walking with the sword is my absolute favorite visual that the show has ever done. And then I also enjoyed Lorne calling for the doctor because I was crying. I was laughing so hard during that scene with Angel, like, and the stuffing is all going on. I couldn't handle it.
And he's, like, holding it to himself, yeah. Like it's his organs or something.
And then Lauren's just, like, holding him in his arms. I can't.
So good. All right. Favorite lines. Mine was when they're trying to figure out what happened to Angel. Lauren goes, maybe you have some type of puppet cancer. And Angel goes, I do not have puppet cancer. And I foresee myself talking about puppet cancer more in the future because that was hilarious.
I do not have puppet cancer.
And I just love that those are two words that got put together. Some type of puppet cancer. My.
We've already said it, but it needs to be said again. I made the felt, and Lemo comes off.
Oh my gosh. It's so good. It's so good.
Oh. Natalie.
Tell me what Brittany picked, because I can't see the doc.
So I'll go first. Mine is when Lauren stumbles upon Angel and he just says, "My little prince."
Leo was watching me. She lost it at that as well.
Oh my god, it's just so pure. And he's just like, "My little prince." And he's like stuffing everywhere. Also, anytime Ratio squeaked, so.
I liked the repeated "you're a wee little puppet man" line, like Spike's first reaction of "you're a bloody puppet," and then he's like, "maybe it's because you're a wee little puppet man," and then later he's, you know, like, what are they all doing? He's like, maybe they're looking at the wee little puppet man. So I have to give a shout out to be like to Angel himself being like, "Yes, I'm a puppet. Doesn't mean you don't have work to do." I felt that very strongly. I felt like I don't have any time for this nonsense. I don't care what's going on. Just can do it. So yeah.
Oh, so good. All right, that wraps up our discussion for this week.
Well, can't every episode be smile time?
Do it again next week?
Yeah, we'll just watch it again next week. It'll be fine.
I mean, I know Brittany will be.
I will be watching it again.
You could watch it this afternoon with me.
I could. That's a thing that can happen.
Yeah.
Dallas.
All right. If you guys have thoughts about these episodes or anything we had to say about these episodes, or you had delightful things you want to say about Angel Puppet, we would love to hear them. You can email your thoughts to us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Tweet to us at re_watchable. I'm sure Brittany would love gifts of Puppet Angel coming into the Twitter.
All the gifts.
Find us on Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can rate us on iTunes, which helps other people find the show. And if you rate us 5 stars, then Karen will tell you how to get to Sesame Street.
Oh, that's
she'll tell you how to get to Sesame Street.
Yeah, I wasn't going to sing.
Yeah, I know. You never do.
I'm tone deaf. You don't want to hear it. All right. So, listener feedback. We put a call out to what shows you guys might like to hear us do next. We're asking preferably for short shows for obvious reasons. So we got a few responses. So
a few. The Twitter has been blowing up. Thanks, Karen, for giving me fair warning that you were going to do that.
All right. So Brittany and Mai, would you like to take the first couple?
Sure. So we have quite a few suggestions from Mythic P. Sure, Gertrude sent in the series Young Justice, Foyle's War, Lizzie Bennet Diaries, The Newsroom, Pride and Prejudice from 1995, and Animals of Farthing Wood.
Yes!
Okay.
I
mean,
we should definitely, I have the DVD, if we do Animals of Farthing Wood, you need to get Leo on as a super fan. We own the DVDs, and yeah. Lizzie Bennet Diaries is a web series. Aren't the episodes only 5 minutes long?
They're longer than that, but it is a web series.
Mm. Yeah. And Young Justice has been uncancelled. There's a new season coming
out.
So that's probably a no then.
Yes.
Animals of Farthing Wood would be very interesting. I feel like I've talked about this once before. But
yeah, yes, we have talked about that.
Very interesting.
I wouldn't say no to Pride and Prejudice.
That's a mini series, is it not? Does that count? Like,
I don't know if
it also would. We know how it ends.
We can make it count.
Like, I feel like a book adaptation is like, is a different experience in terms of knowing, like the conceptual ending, but I don't know, maybe that people would like that. I don't know.
If people haven't read the book.
Yeah, Karen was admitting to not having read it at one point.
Yeah, I know. Said,
she never seen any version of it?
She has now because we made her do it for book hype.
Yeah.
Okay.
But Pride and Prejudice might be worth it for, you know, Colin Firth in a wet shirt.
So, yeah, I was out in New York with Karen and I found the DVDs on sale for $1 and I bought them for her. So she owns it on DVD.
Mai, you want to get the next one?
Yes. Cassiopeia's Moon at Cassiopeia's Moon says, Gallivant, 2 seasons, a total of 18 half an hour episodes, lots of laughs.
We had a lot of people say Gallivant.
I've been recommended Gallivant heavily as well. It's a musical comedy. It's a Alan Menken sort of musical, anachronistic medieval show, and there's a tiny bit of depth to it, but I don't know if it would be really.
Yeah,
that's one with Timothy Amundsen, isn't it?
Yeah, Tim Amundsen's in it. Yeah, yeah, he's one of the leads.
Yeah. The next tweet also kind of speaks to that too about the problems with choosing Gallivant.
I do have it open now if you want me to read anything.
Sure.
Go for it.
Okay, so the next one was from Cassandra Palliard saying, I see folks nominating Gallivant, but fear the Pushing Daisies curse. Sheer whimsy equals boring podcast that says nothing to analyze. Hope for a show that's trying to tell a complex story. Someday when you're ready for vampires again, True Blood, as there's never been a good podcast for it, and it has great mysteries to discuss.
Yeah, that's a longer one, but something to keep in our back pocket.
Mariah, not Carrie, at Mariah Lovegood says, smash. I just had a dream last night that I was going to see Catherine McPhee in a Broadway show, and when someone asked me for help on the way, I told them I could not be late because smash, confused look, I cannot be late to see someone from the show Smash. Oh, yes.
I would definitely be into doing Smash. However, Hyperball did do a podcast for it when it was airing.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's whatever. That's one thing or another. Like, the people involved with that podcast aren't on Hyperball anymore. And I love Smash to distraction. And Catherine McPhee really is on Broadway right now. I don't know if that's what Mariah was referencing.
Yeah.
She's in Waitress. Catherine McPhee is not my favorite part of Smash, so I'm not Waitress. But... fucking Karen. I don't know if Karen could take it.
Yeah, I don't know if Karen could take it.
We were just like screaming, fucking Karen. Jack Davenport in that show and Deb Messing in that show and Christian Ball in that show and Megan Hilty in that show and Jeremy Jordan in that show. It's so many characters that I love. I quote Smash constantly. I love it so much. I would be super into doing Smash. I just don't know if Karen could handle
it. I've never seen it.
So good. It's such trash, but it's so good.
I love it so much. I think it's too niche to be like, to have been successful. Like, you really have to know Broadway well to get the real deep jokes of it or the like references or the, you know, surprise appearances. But, oh, I would love it.
All right, we got some more. Brittany?
So our next nomination, which is also very popular on the Twitter, and I think Danielle would lose her mind, comes from Farzin G24, who says, I'll nominate either Agent Carter, only 2 seasons, 8 episodes each, or Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles, which is a fantastic show and canceled too soon, only after 2 seasons. It has like 30-something episodes total. We got a lot of Sarah Connor Chronicles and Agent Carter requests.
Agent Carter would, I've never seen Sarah Connor. I've heard it's good. Agent Carter would definitely be a super fan for. it's definitely a show that stands alone if you know a little bit of context about, like, the Marvel Universe. I would say, like, watch Cap 1, and then that's – we could do a special episode for watching Captain America First Avenger and then into Agent Carter, because it's definitely a standalone period drama. And it's beautiful, and I love it. And, yeah, there's been some extreme, like, obviously fan reactions to it being cancelled, which I know annoyed some people in this conversation. But it is a beautiful show, and I really love it. And I really love the characters. And Hayley Atwell as Peggy is a really unusual female lead, in that she's very
hands-on.
She's very inelegant. Like, she's very, like, she — it's not just that she's like a fighter, like many women are. She's really, like, she's allowed to do things as a woman that women aren't usually allowed to do on screen. And I'm not talking about combat. I'm talking about behavior and personality and stuff. Like, the way she eats, for example, is, like, very messy and inelegant. And, like, there's lots of things about it that I really, really love. So, completely separate to the Marvel connection. So, yeah.
All right, Natalie, I'll turn the next one to you.
Okay, yeah, this is from Leo at The Lady Mania. She'll be very happy to hear that we read it out. She has suggested Kings. It is King's 10th anniversary, and that show is tragically short, just saying. Kings is, yeah, one season NBC show, a modern retelling of the historical David and Goliath story. And it's absolutely genius. It's the kind of show that was, like, high quality, like cable HBO kind of type of drama that a network television really didn't know how to handle or market, and so it got cancelled. Created by Michael Green, who's worked on American Gods and Heroes and stuff. Not Heroes, something. Anyway, he wrote a long thread recently about, like, the making of Kings and what it meant to him at the time, because it was a really important thing for him. And, yeah, it's kind of a gone too soon, ahead of its time, amazing show. And, yeah, it is only one season. It would probably literally only take us 6 weeks or four or 5 weeks to do. And I'd definitely be into it.
I've been wanting to watch Kings, so I would be into that.
Beautiful. I mean, they're long episodes, so you could probably even do, like, episodes of they're very long, very deep episodes. They might be an hour. I think they might be longer than 40 minutes. So you could even do, if it's, like, 12 episodes, you could do one episode per week probably. Mm-hmm. And do, like, you could do a 90-minute podcast or a 1 hour and 20-minute podcast on one episode per week for 12 weeks pretty easily.
All right. And Mai, do you want to get the last tweet?
Yes. Cassandra at Palliard responded to Cordelia's beautiful, fantastic You're Welcome scene with amazing how she lights up the story. We didn't really kill the show when he fired her. Don't disagree.
She was so perfect. She was actually written like herself, and it was so perfect. All right, we will wrap up as usual with our newbie predictions. We only have one newbie this week. So Brittany's brainstorms for 5:15, A Hole in the World, and 5:16, Shells.
Well, I know that the cold open for 5:15 is the best thing to ever happen to Angel besides Puppets, because I accidentally let my Hulu autoplay and I watched it and I love it so much. But I have no idea what else happens in the episode. So A Hole in the World... we deal with a lot of holes in these two series, like a literal hole where Sunnydale once was. So possibly could be talking about a literal hole in the world where they have to prevent it from happening or go see the hole in the world in Sunnydale. Or it could be a hole meaning like something's missing and they need to fill the void by doing some shady dealings with one of their clients. Because I feel like we're not in a very, like, overarching, like, narrative place here. So I feel like the next couple episodes are either going to set up something to, like, you know, get us into high gear for the series finale, or we're just going to keep doing some episodic stuff at this point and drag out, like, the gun storylines and the Wes and Fred relationship, because now I'm pretty sure they're going to have to bring that to the larger group. Yeah, so plot-wise, I'm not entirely sure if we're going to deal with a literal hole or a figurative hole. And shells, oh, can we get some mermaids in here? Because, you know, we haven't dealt with that. That's not a thing yet. Or maybe those, like, people that they sent into the ocean in season one of Buffy come back. Wreak some havoc on LA.
Oh, the fish people?
Yeah, the fish people. yeah, so shells, hopefully we're going to the beach.
All right. We will see how Brittany's predictions fare next week. We will have a whole new crew to discuss those episodes. Until next time, my name is Caitlin.
I'm Mai.
I am Natalie.
And I'm Brittany.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
Bye.